Visiting with us. It's a blessing to have you with us here this morning. What we're going to be doing this morning is we're going to be picking up in the book of Isaiah in chapter 46. We've been doing an overview of the book of Isaiah, where we're covering in many lessons 2 to 3 chapters at a time. And so today we're going to be covering chapters 46, 47, 48, and that is lesson 19 in the workbook. So if you have a workbook with you, that's where we're going to be studying from. With the passages, I will not have every single passage up on the screen. I'll have portions of scripture on the screen, but I won't have the whole thing in its entirety. So if you would grab your Bible, we'll be going through starting in chapter 46. Thank you, Dale, for giving me the opportunity to teach this morning, and I'll be teaching also on Wednesday. And then I believe Larry will be picking up this coming Sunday, this next Sunday. So let's begin in chapter 46, beginning in verse 1, and I'll be reading verses 1 and 2. Bel has bowed down, Nebo stoops over. Their images are consigned to the beast and the cattle. The things that you carry are burdensome, a load for the weary beast. They stooped over, and they have bowed down together. They could not rescue the burden, but have themselves gone into captivity. Now, right at the beginning of chapter 46, it's continuing a thought that we've been going through for several chapters now, where God is going to be comparing his supremacy to that of false gods. In many ways, he's talking about these false gods and how worthless they are, and how sad it is that people put their faith in them. Specifically, he mentions right here at the beginning of verse 1 of chapter 46, Bel and Nebo. Well, who were Bel and Nebo? Who were these gods? Well, they were the false gods of Babylon. If you wanted to, you could in some ways say that Bel was a chief god or a principal god to the Babylonians, as Zeus was a god to the Grecians. Nebo was Bel's son. And you can see these two pictures up on the screen. These are some depictions of Bel and Nebo. The one on the top is where I believe that is Bel fighting against a dragon. Bel is on the left. I guess you're right. But you see those gods up there, those false gods. According to the historian Herodotus, the image of Bel was gold and it was 18 feet tall. And these were the gods that the Babylonians worshipped. There was a major temple for these gods that was 12 miles south of Babylon. What this passage is saying is that these gods, they stooped over. They're going to stoop over and they're going to bow down. What a powerful statement for God. For Jehovah to say that the gods of Babylon are going to be brought down. Bel and Nebo are going to be humbled. The people of Babylon put so much faith in them. And in verses 1 and 2, it talks about that these gods would carry the image of a beast or of cattle. That is what they would look like. And how ironic it is that they would have an image of, let's say, a cow in the actual false god or of a beast. And that the exact same thing that they look like will be the thing that will carry them off into captivity. How ironic is that? It's going to have to carry it off into captivity. Because they would ride off on the beast or the cattle away into captivity. They were burdensome. They were a load for a weary beast. It's important to note that as impressive as they may have looked, you think about a statue of 18 feet made of gold. As impressive as it looked, as expensive as it was, as crafted with artistry it would have been, these false gods in Babylon, they're going to fall. They're going to be shown to be false. And when would this occur? When would this occur? When Cyrus conquers Babylon. What was the point that Isaiah is making here? These gods could not and would not deliver Babylon. It's not going to happen. They themselves are going to go into captivity. Let's look at verses 3 through 7. In verse 3 it reads, "Listen to me, O house of Jacob, and all the remnant of the house of Israel, you who have been born by me from birth and have been carried from the womb. Even to your old age I will be the same, and even to your graying years I will bear you. I have done it, and I will carry you, and I will bear you, and I will deliver you. To whom would you liken me and make me equal and compare me, that we would be alike? Those who lavish gold from the purse and weigh silver on the scale, and hire a goldsmith, and he makes it into a god. They bow down, indeed they worship it. They lift it upon the shoulder and carry it. They set it in its place, and it stands there. It does not move from its place, though one may cry to it, it cannot answer. It cannot deliver him from his distress. Some powerful statements made here, verses 3 through 7. One of the key things that we can take away from this passage is that false gods are carried. A false god, an image, had to be carried by man or beast from place to place because it couldn't move on its own accord. They had to move it. But God is saying that false gods are carried, but you know what? I've carried you, Israel. I've carried you. God carries you. Bel and Nebo had to be carried, but I carried you. Some of the statements that are made in verse 3, God says to Israel, you were born by me from birth. He says, I have carried you from the womb. You think about that. He carried them out of Egypt. He carried them through the wilderness. He carried them into the promised land. God has carried his people. Ironically, too, we have to make the point, though, that God's also going to carry them into captivity, isn't he? He's going to punish them because of their wickedness and their idolatry and them betraying him. But he's also going to carry out a remnant. All of those things are going to come to pass. He's going to consistently carry Israel. In verse 4, it says, even to your old age, I will be the same. Even to your old age, I will be the same. And it says, and even to your graying years, I will bear you. God doesn't change. You know, we look around this audience, and if we took a picture right now of each of us, and then 20 years from now, 15 years from now, we take another picture, we're going to see some of us have gained some gray hairs. We're getting older, we've got more wrinkles, we're aging. God doesn't age. God doesn't change. His deliverance remains the same. What a wonderful point for them and for us. You know, men carry idols, but God is saying, you don't carry me. I carry you. You put your trust in me and I'll carry you. That's how this works. The same is true today. We don't carry God. God carries us. This is a passage of reminder of the trust we are to put in God, knowing that he is loyal to his people, and in a life of changes, God doesn't change. God doesn't change. So this is a message of comfort to us, as it should have been a comfort to them. It should have been a wake-up call to them of the consistency of God. Another statement in verse 5, it says, to whom would you liken me? Who am I like? Who could you compare me to? You know, this is a question that has been posed several times in this section since chapter 40. It's mentioned in chapter 40 and verse 18 also. And the repetition of this question throughout these chapters that we're going through really shows how God wanted Israel to fully realize that there is no one like him. There's no other God but Jehovah. You can't compare me to the gods of Babylon. You can't compare me to some man-made image. It's not the same. I am supreme, is what God is saying. He has no equal. The point that's being made is how futile and foolish and even ridiculous it is to trust in a man-made image when you have God Almighty. You know, why are idols, false gods, so foolish to trust in? There was a slide that Dale put up Wednesday night, talked about false gods being dumb and such. Do you all remember that? And this is some of the same type of same type of discussion that God is having. But some of the statements that are made is in verse 6. It says, false gods are made from gold that's found in a purse. It's weighed on a scale. They weigh it out. It's formed by a goldsmith. Now you think about that right there. Who made God? Who made God? What's the answer to that question? Nobody made God. He's always existed. Nobody made God. No one crafted God or conceived him. What about a false god? Who's a craftsman? It's a man. It's a man. And isn't it amazing that they'll worship the thing that's carved out of wood, covered in gold, and then the craftsman over here who crafted it, you know, he's of no account. Isn't that ridiculous that we trust, and these people were trusting in such foolishness? Whether it was the Babylonians who did this, or all the cultures through time that have done this, or Israel that's done this, trusting a false god is absolute foolishness. Yeah. Right. I'm sure they did. Yeah. Right. There was no consultation, you know, where God and, you know, someone else or a man consulted to decide, well, how should this be crafted? How should the tabernacle be done? God decided it. It's a great point.
You know, it's also interesting. It's formed by a goldsmith. Well, where did he get gold? Dale pointed out the other day that, you know, gold was made by God.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Just transfer it from one to the other. That's right. They had to be carried around and sat down. You think about these guys that they thought could control so much, couldn't even move from here to there. You had to pick them up. How ridiculous. They had to carry it around. It was a burden for a weary beast, as it mentioned earlier. They cannot answer. They would call out to these false gods. They don't answer. God answers. Jehovah answers. And then, finally, verse 7, which is very important, they cannot deliver. And I made a little note in my Bible because if you look, the very last statement in verse 4 says, I will bear you and I will deliver you. God says, I will deliver you. What's the last statement at the end of verse 7? It cannot deliver him from his distress. I deliver, they don't. That's what God is saying. Jehovah delivers, false gods can never deliver. And we're going to see, does Babylon get delivered by their gods? No, and you can look at secular history. Where is Babylon today? Doesn't exist. Doesn't exist. It happened. So that's an amazing statement of faith for us. We look here at this next section. It talks about verses 8 through 10. Let's read that. Remember this and be assured. Recall it to mind, you transgressors. Remember the former things long past. For I am God and there is no other. I am God and there is no one like me. Declaring the end from the beginning, and from ancient times things which have not been done. Saying, my purpose will be established, and I will accomplish all my good pleasure. A key word that's mentioned here is the word remember. God wants to bring to remembrance several things. What does God want them to remember? Well, if you think right before verse 8, he wants them, first of all, to remember that idols don't deliver. You can't trust in a false god to deliver you. Another point that can be made is that Jehovah alone is God. And these are statements that are made over and over again throughout this section of about eight chapters, about Isaiah 40 through about 48. That Jehovah alone is God, false gods cannot deliver. But also some other statements are made here too. In verse 9, it says, remember the former things long past. Look to the past. Remember the things I've done for you. Well, what did God do for them in the past? He consistently delivered Israel whenever they followed him. He stood by them. Whenever they followed him, they were delivered. They conquered nations and peoples that were much stronger and much mightier than they were in number because God was with them and delivered them. Also, we read in verse 9, it says, for I am God and there is no other. I am God, there is no one like me. That's one of the foundational phrases that's mentioned over and over again throughout this section, that there is no one like God. He is God, there is no other. And also in verse 10, there's a very powerful statement here that God says, I declare the end from the beginning. What God purposes will be established and it will come to pass. And we see that throughout this whole section where it talks about Israel going into captivity, Babylon, Cyrus, the remnant, the Messiah. All these things are where he's saying, I can see the end from the beginning. What false god can do that? What false god has ever done that? God is making his point. There aren't any false gods that can do that. There aren't any false gods that can do that. God alone is God. Jehovah is God. So even with it, when you look back, declaring the end from the beginning, the promises to Abraham, the deliverance of Israel from Egypt and so on, it points backwards to all the wonderful things that God has done. But also there's an interesting point that's going to point forward into what he's about to talk about in verse 11. So let's look at that. Verses 11 through 13. Calling a bird of prey from the east, the man of my purpose from a far country. Truly I have spoken, truly I will bring it to pass. As I have planned, surely I will do it. Listen to me, you stubborn-minded who are far from righteousness. I will bring near my righteousness, it is not far off. My salvation will not delay. And I will grant salvation in Zion and my glory for Israel. Right off the bat here in verse 11, it describes a bird of prey from the east. A bird of prey from the east, a man of purpose from a far country. The man that is being described here is Cyrus, and this is not the first time he's been described. Throughout this section, there are several times when Cyrus is mentioned. But Cyrus is going to be a ravenous bird that's going to rush upon, he's going to fall upon Babylon with fury. And you know what's amazing about this prophecy is what? Is Cyrus around right now? Is Cyrus like, you know, just, you know, is he a contemporary of this time? Is he alive? Doesn't exist. How long is it going to be before Cyrus comes around? Around 100 years, 150 years. He doesn't even exist yet. And what's amazing about that? He just made the statement. What was that, Dale? Sorry. Babylon's not even in power, not this world power like it's going to be. And isn't it funny, because didn't God just say, I declare the end from the beginning? Here you go. Cyrus mentions by name, Cyrus of Persia is going to conquer Babylon. Now, sometimes we might sit here and say, you know, I don't know if, you know, does God exist? People question God and say, you know, does he hear my prayers? Does he really forgive my sins? Is he really acting? Yes. And we can look at secular history and we can read, there was a man named Cyrus of Persia. He conquered Babylon. The things that God is talking about right here in these verses and these chapters in Isaiah, they happen. And even secular history backs it up. It supports it. That's an amazing testament. So this is going to be Cyrus that comes in as a bird of prey from the east to conquer Babylon. God has planned it, and God will surely do it. Also, it talks about in verse 11, truly I have spoken, truly I will bring it to pass. I have planned it, and surely I will do it. God is telling those that are stubborn-minded, those that are far off from righteousness, that his righteousness is not far off. In a little over a century, all of these things are going to occur, and Cyrus of Persia is going to conquer Babylon. Again, God's purpose is not going to fail in what he says he does. It also talks about that he will grant salvation in Zion. That is mentioned there in verse 13. I will grant salvation in Zion and my glory for Israel. Salvation will be granted to Zion, and the Zion being spoken of here is spiritual Zion. Spiritual Zion is also referenced in Hebrews chapter 12 in verse 22. Where it reads, but you have come to Mount Zion and to the city of the living God, the heavenly Jerusalem, to myriads of angels and to the general assembly and the church of the firstborn who are enrolled in heaven, and to God, the judge of all, and to the spirits of the righteous made perfect, and to Jesus, the mediator of a new covenant, and to the sprinkled blood which speaks far better than the blood of Abel. It is a spiritual Zion that he is speaking of, and that he will grant salvation to it. Does anyone have any comments or questions about chapter 46 before we move on? Yeah, Sherry? That's right. That's right. It's a statement of the supremacy of God, and we can't speak on his behalf, can we? One statement that I sometimes hear is people say things like, well, God doesn't care. God won't mind if you do this or that. Who put you in that position to say such a thing? You know what? What revelation's been made to them that has been made to all man, and to take those liberties? And it just shows you that's man trying to do what they want to do and speak in the place of God when we have no right. We have no right. Okay, let's look at chapter 47. We'll read verses 1 through 6. Come down and sit in the dust, O virgin daughter of Babylon. Sit on the ground without a throne, O daughter of the Chaldeans, for you shall no longer be called tender and delicate. Take the millstones and grind the meal. Remove the veil, strip off the skirt, uncover the leg, cross the rivers. Your nakedness will be uncovered. Your shame also will be exposed. I will take vengeance and will not spare a man. Our Redeemer, the Lord of hosts is his name, the Holy One of Israel. Sit silently and go into darkness, O daughter of the Chaldeans, for you will no longer be called the Queen of Kingdoms. I was angry with my people, I profaned my heritage, and gave them into your hand. You did not show mercy to them. On the aged, you made your yoke very heavy. And this section is talking about Babylon going from the highest point that you could think of, world power, the queen, going all the way down to the lowest that you can think of, the slave. And God is going to demote them. And several specific statements are mentioned that are going to happen to them. In verse 1, it talks about Babylon being described as a virgin daughter. What does that mean? Well, the statement comes from the fact that up to this point, Babylon had not been conquered. It had not been invaded by a foreign country. It had not been humbled or conquered. Well, that's going to change. Again, this is pointing to what we talked about there at the end of chapter 46, Cyrus of Persia. The bird of prey from the east will come and conquer Babylon, and the mighty are going to be humbled. What kind of statements are made about Babylon? What's going to happen to them? Well, in verse 1, it says they're going to sit in the dust. Babylon's going to be made to sit in the dust, on the ground, without a throne. You think about, back in this time, you think about kings sitting on these fancy, richly made thrones. And you can imagine what would it be like if that king had to sit in the dust. That kind of a demotion. That's what's going to happen to Babylon. It also says in verse 1 that they shall no longer be called tender and delicate. Tender and delicate could be seen as being characteristics of a queen. Characteristics of someone who's living in luxury. Someone who lives in pleasure. Which is what Babylon was. It was a place of great pleasure. Worldliness. The next statement, it says, take the millstones and grind the meal. What's the significance of that statement? Who would grind the meal back during this time? Slaves. Is that an easy task? No. It's said that grinding meal is the hardest, most menial task that a woman slave could have. It would have been a strenuous job for the lowliest of slaves. And then also it says their veil will be removed, their skirt will be taken away, uncover the leg. Their nakedness will be exposed. Their leisurely clothing will be changed to the clothing of a common slave. You think about this condemnation from God upon this country. Upon this nation. that Babylon is going to be going from the queen to the slave, that they will be put to shame at the hands of the Almighty God. And in verse 5 it says, for you will no longer be called the Queen of Kingdoms. And it happens. All these things come to pass, don't they? It also says in verse 6, you did not show mercy to them. Well, why is God going to judge Babylon without mercy? They didn't show any mercy. They didn't show any mercy. They're going to get treated the way they treated Israel. Get treated the way they treated others. They showed no mercy to Israel. They showed no mercy to the aged. They made their yoke very heavy upon them. And so this powerful nation will be treated in a way that they treated other nations when they conquered them. They're going to be treated without mercy. And it will come to pass because they are going to be humiliated. They're going to be humiliated just like they humiliated the covenant people of Jehovah. Let's look at verse 7, 7 through 11. Yet you said, I will be queen forever. These things you did not consider nor remember the outcome of them. Now then, hear this, you sensual one, who dwells securely and who says in your heart, I am and there is no one besides me. I will not sit as a widow nor know the loss of children. But these two things will come on you suddenly in one day, loss of children and widowhood. They will come on you, and in full measure, in spite of your many sorceries, in spite of the great power of your spells. You felt secure in your wickedness and said, no one sees me. Your wisdom and your knowledge, they have deluded you. For you have said in your heart, I am, and there is no one besides me. But evil will come upon you, which you will not know how to charm away. And disaster will fall on you, for which you cannot atone. And destruction about which you do not know will come upon you suddenly, will come on you suddenly. This section speaks of the arrogance of Babylon, how arrogant they would be, and some of the statements and the emotions and the feelings that they had of their great might and power as a nation, the things they trusted in, the pride and arrogance of them. They boasted in saying in verse 7, I will be a queen forever. They said, I am, and there's no one besides me. What's ironic about that statement? Babylon is saying of itself, I am, and there's no one besides me. What did we read earlier? Who's the one that exists, and there's no one besides him? It's God. They're saying, practically, we're sovereign. We're all powerful. Babylon is saying that of themselves. They're saying, I will not sit as a widow. I will not know the loss of children. In verse 8, you know, Babylon was a place of great power and pleasure. And if you remember Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, in Daniel chapter 4 and verse 30, he reflected on the greatness of Babylon and he said, is this not Babylon the great, which I myself have built as a royal residence for the might of my power and for the glory of my majesty? The king of Babylon, Nebuchadnezzar, talking about I, my pleasure, my power, me. They felt that they had built this great nation. Babylon was prideful. They were an indulgent nation. And their arrogance and their pride is going to be humbled. The queen, again, is going to become the slave, isn't it? They're going to know the loss of children and widowhood. They said, we won't know the loss of children and widowhood. It's not going to happen to us. That'll happen to the countries that we capture. But it's not going to ever happen to us. Well, it did. Verse 9 tells us that they're going to be humbled by a loss of children and widowhood. Two things that they thought would never happen to them will happen in full force suddenly in one day. Daniel chapter 5, verse 30 tells us that Babylon fell in one night. In one night it fell. The full measure of God's wrath and justice will be poured out upon them by way of parents losing their children, wives losing their husbands. Babylon will not be able to trust in their false gods and in their man-made religions to charm away their destruction. All of this will come to pass, and there's absolutely nothing that Babylon can do about it. They were known for trusting in even sorcery and spells. That's what it's going to talk about in this next section. Sorcery and spells. It made them feel secure. It made them felt that nothing could ever happen to them. But it tells in verse 10, they won't know how to charm this disaster away. They won't know how to charm it away. The trickery of man and his deceitful schemes would be of no avail to thwart the will of God. And as we mentioned in chapter 46, God's going to bring his will to pass. He's going to conquer Babylon. Let's look at these last few verses here in chapter 47, beginning in verse 12. It reads, "Stand fast now in your spells and in your many sorceries, with which you have labored from your youth. Perhaps you will be able to profit. Perhaps you may cause trembling. You are wearied with your many counsels. Let now the astrologers and those who prophesy by the stars, those who predict by the new moons, stand up and save you from what will come upon you. Behold, they have become like stubble. Fire burns them. They cannot deliver themselves from the power of the flame. There will be no coal to warm by, nor a fire to sit before. So have those become to you with whom you have labored, who have trafficked with you from your youth. Each has wandered in his own way, and there is none to save you." Babylon trusted in sorcery. They trusted in astrology. These things aren't going to save them. Just as Bel and Nebo, as was mentioned at the beginning of chapter 46, can't save them, astrology, sorcery, these things also can't save them. It said that Babylon would even determine whether or not to go to war or who to crown or dispose as an emperor based on astrology, based on the location of stars or movements of planets. They would make these really, really difficult decisions based on the stars and the moon. Horoscopes were things that they would trust in. In verse 12, it says that they labored in spells and sorceries even from their youth. It was throughout their culture. Verse 13 proclaims, "Now let the astrologers, those who prophesy by the stars, those who predict the new moon, stand up and save you from what will come upon you." Let them save you. But the fact of the matter is they can't. It says in verse 14 that they're going to become like stubble. The fire is going to burn them. There will be utter destruction rendered to the astrologers, to those who trust in new moons, those who are filled with sorcery, fulfilling sorcery, and put their trust in that. And Babylon in general will also be destroyed and conquered. It says in verse 15 that there is none to save you. How powerful is that last statement right there at the end of chapter 47? The finality of that statement would ring true. There's no one who can save you, Babylon. No one can save you. When God has pronounced judgment on you, there's nothing that can be done on your part where you can trust in a false god or astrology or whatever you want. It's not going to happen. There would be no salvation for Babylon. They could not trust in their astrologers and their prophecies and their stars that they would look to. Do you have any comments or questions about chapter 47? Yes.
One of the things that when I was teaching class back here with the little girls,
That's right. Yeah, horoscopes, and you still see them every day in the newspaper, don't you? Horoscopes are printed. That's right. You need to stay away from putting any type of trust in that. It's just man-made fluff. It means nothing, right? Any other comments or questions? Yeah.
He comes back, he spends 8 or 10 verses there in chapter 4 talking about how all
Yeah, he did.
Right. That's right. All right, let's look at chapter 48. Hear this, O house of Jacob, who are named Israel, and who came forth from the loins of Judah, who swore by the name of the Lord and invoked the God of Israel, but not in truth or in righteousness. For they call themselves after the holy city and lean on the God of Israel. The Lord of hosts is his name. I declared the former things long ago, and they went forth from my mouth, and I proclaimed them. Suddenly I acted, and they came to pass, because I know that you are obstinate. Your neck is as iron sinew, and your forehead bronze. Therefore I declared them to you long ago. Before they took place, I proclaimed them to you, so that you would not say, my idol has done them, and my graven image and my molten image have commanded them. This speaks to the hypocrisy of Israel and the supremacy of God again. This section goes into more detail about the sorceries, the enchantments that Babylon trusted in, that they trusted in astrology and sorcery. But even more so, as you go into this next section, that's what we just left, it talks about that they would invoke God, which means that they would call on God. But the fact of the matter is are they calling on God in righteousness? No, they're not. Not in truth or in righteousness are they actually petitioning or calling to God. In verse 3, God reminds them of how he spoke to him in the past, and how it came to fruition. When God says something, he does it. He's making that point again. And then also, why did God proclaim to them things that were to come? Because they were an obstinate people. He speaks about them specifically as being obstinate. Their neck was as iron sinew. Their forehead was bronze. They were a stubborn people. And so he is revealing these things to them ahead of time so that they can't say, you know, it was our idols who came up with this. Our idols said years ago that Cyrus would come. Our idol said years ago that Babylon would take us into captivity. No, I said it, is what Jehovah is saying. I proclaimed it long ago, so that he alone is proclaimed as God. Verse 6, you have heard, look at all this. And you, will you not declare it? I proclaim to you the new things from this time, even hidden things which you have not known. They are created now and not long ago, and before today you have not heard them, so that you will not say, behold, I knew them. You have not heard, you have not known. Even from long ago, your ear has not been opened, because I knew that you would deal very treacherously, and you have been called a rebel from birth. God is saying, I proclaim hidden things and new things. The idols couldn't declare things that were to come. The idols could not declare new things or hidden things, only God alone. Some of the things that God declares throughout the book of Isaiah, especially in this section, is this judgment on Israel, the downfall of Babylon. Talks specifically about Cyrus. Talks about the remnant that would remain and would return. And it also talks about the Messiah to come. Specifically, Israel is described as a rebel from birth. We know that's true. So we read through the Old Testament. How true is it that Israel has been a rebel from birth? God knew that they would deal treacherously and that they have been called a rebel. They have been disobedient. But even throughout all that disobedience, God is still going to deliver a remnant, because of his faithfulness to his promises. All right, we'll pick up in chapter 49 on Wednesday. Thank you all for your attention and your comments.
Spend so much time going out, so I figured this.
Chapter 46 is almost a repetition of 44.
This channel, this part here, he's speaking. This is God.
That's what it is.
So he's kept on coming. Okay. And he's there. You guys
that's
understand.
Right. That's right. That's right.
Thank you. okay.
Is that it?
Yeah,
okay.
That's it. Right there.
All right. Now let's see if we can go ahead. And...
All right. Yep. That's
I thought, but I didn't know for sure.